Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Make memories during Happy Honda Days.
They said that the pressure that they were under was suffocating. It really was. And, you know, for them to be able to play as well as they did in that kind of pressure is pretty amazing. I don't think any NHL team before, any NHL team since, or even into the future, will ever face the kind of pressure that the Flyers faced that day against the Soviet Red Army.
And our guest this week, Ed Gruber. He is an author who has written a fascinating new book, The Game That Saved the NHL. It's about the Flyers' 1976 win over the Soviet Red Army team at the Spectrum. Ed, thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So you've written a lot of books on a lot of different topics. Before we kind of dig into the story, what was it about this game that piqued your interest? What's kind of the origin story behind you deciding to write this book?
One of the things I did in my initial research was to see if any book had been written about not only this game between the Flyers and the Soviet Red Army team, but also on the series itself, Super Series 76, which was groundbreaking in that it was the first time that NHL teams played two teams from the Soviet League. Now, there have been two previous summits, one in 1972, one in 74, where NHL and WHA all-star teams had played Soviet national teams, but they had never played a series where you had NHL clubs like the Flyers, the Bruins, the Canadiens, the Rangers, and so forth, playing two Soviet teams. One was the Central Red Army team, and the other club was the Soviet Wings, and they were the top two teams in the Soviet League.
How long was the process of putting the book together, writing it? Like, how long were you talking?
We're talking about pretty much 8 years or so. Actually, it started out as a couple of articles for a hockey website. And I put it aside for a while to write some other books and then went back to it and, again, did some research to see, you know, if anyone else had done anything similar to that. No one had done anything yet, and I decided it was the right time to go ahead and do it.
So let's give people some context, because I think a lot of people today kind of struggle to get their heads around what these Cold War athletic matchups were like. I think obviously a lot of people know the 80 Olympic hockey mm-hmm. team, but there were a lot of places where this Cold War situation would bubble up, and this was one of them. And these were important. There was a lot of not just athletic, but political context baked into this.
There were. The Soviet Union saw this basically as an extension of their politics, their style of government. The Central Red Army team, the players on it were enlisted in the Red Army. And for 11 months out of the year, every year, their job was to practice, train, and play hockey. And the Soviet Union's outlook was that if we can dominate teams in Europe and dominate teams in North America, we can show by extension that our form of government, our politics, our lifestyle is superior to every other. And again, the flip side of that is that North Americans saw themselves as, you know, extensions of their form of government, but basically only when in international competition. You know, otherwise they're representing their teams, their cities, so forth. But that's where the politics came into play with this. It was much more than a hockey game. It was basically a political ideology contest as well.
The title of the book, The Game That Saved the NHL, that is a bold statement. Kind of talk to me about why you chose that and what it meant in the context of the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, when the two Soviet teams came to North America for an eight-game series in late 1975 and early 1976, you had the Red Army team would play four games and the Soviet Wings would play four games. And the schedule makers kind of indulged their sense of drama by matching up the two league champions, the Red Army team and the Philadelphia Flyers, who had won the two previous Stanley Cups, in the eighth and final game in Philadelphia. And what this came down to was basically supremacy on the world hockey stage. If the Soviets would win this game against the defending Stanley Cup champions, then they could claim supremacy in hockey. And basically left open the question then of, you know, what does this mean for the NHL? What does this mean for the Stanley Cup? You know, we're supposed to be representative of the best hockey in the world. We have been for decades. And now if the Soviets can beat our championship team, then that kind of takes the luster off the NHL and the Stanley Cup itself, which is still the most famous trophy in the world. And it's, you know, the importance of this game can really be understood when you realize that before the game, when the Flyers were getting ready to take the ice against the Soviets, the NHL president, Clarence Campbell, who was not a fan of the Broad Street Bullies and the way they played hockey, made a special trip to the Flyers locker room before the game. And he told them, boys, you've got to win this game. You know, the Flyers understood, the league understood that the reputation of the NHL itself was at stake. If they lost to the Soviets, then the entire reputation of the NHL was going to be tarnished.
And going into that game, you mentioned it's the last game. Prior to the Flyers matchup, the Soviets had the upper hand in this series, right?
Yeah, going into the final game in Philadelphia, the two Soviet teams had a combined record of 4-2-1 against the NHL clubs. Now, the Red Army team, which is the Soviet champions, they had beaten the Phil Esposito Rangers in Madison Square Garden. They had beaten the Bobby Orr-less Bruins in Boston Garden. And then on New Year's Eve in 75, they had tied the Canadiens 3-3, although most people who watched that game will state that the Canadiens really outplayed the Soviets, and it was only the exceptional goaltending of Vladislav Tretiak for the Russians that kind of saved them from being routed. But still, you know, the Soviet Red Army team rolled into Philly undefeated. They were 2-0-1 against the NHL teams that they had played to that point.
And you mentioned the Flyers were the back-to-back Stanley Cup champs, and they were coached by Fred Shiro. And one of the things, I mean, Shiro was a special coach, but he also had some intimate knowledge of kind of how the Soviets attacked the game and what they wanted to do and their strategy, no?
Yes. After the Flyers had won their first Stanley Cup when they beat the Bruins in 74, Fred Shiro made a trip to Moscow, went to Russia to learn more about the way the Soviets were playing the game. Because the Soviets were winning international competitions every year. They were winning the Olympics every 4 years. They really were the dominant team on the international scale. So Fred Shiro, who always wanted to push the envelope, you know, wanted to learn from the Soviets what they were doing, how they were doing it, how were they training. And he would bring that back to Philadelphia. And, you know, it's no coincidence, I don't think, that the Flyers, you know, were able to win a second straight Stanley Cup after Freddie Shiro had returned from Moscow with some new ideas on you know, how to play hockey.
So talk a little bit about the buzz surrounding this. It's the last game. You know, the Red Army's 2-0-1. We talk about the Cold War. There was an electricity connected to this game leading up to the date. I think it was January 11th, 1976.
Yeah, there was a lot of electricity, and it actually started days before. The Flyers were in Toronto playing the Maple Leafs. And the Flyers won the game. And as they were heading out of the arena, Toronto fans were chanting, "Beat the Russians." And it was at that point when players like Joe Watson, his brother Jimmy Watson, all the rest of the Flyers realized just how big this upcoming game with the Red Army was going to be. And then on game day itself, you know, there were protests outside of the Spectrum. There were some fights outside the Spectrum. There were picketers. There were protest signs. And it really became more than a hockey game. It really became a kind of a political situation where, you know, again, you had these two ideologies colliding along with two very distinctly different styles of play.
That was the next thing I wanted to ask you. Not only did you have the kind of the Cold War from the macro level, but from a hockey standpoint, it was a fascinating difference in what these teams wanted to do. One of the things about the Broad Street Bullies that I think a lot of people think that they just beat other teams into submission. They were very talented. They were just more physical than the hockey world had been used to that point. But that more physical brand of hockey was against a Russian team that really was speed and agility and ability to skate. It was a fascinating matchup aside from ideology, just from a hockey standpoint.
Yes, it was, because it was basically you had the Russians playing the European style of play, you know, which was finesse, it was speed, it was more passing, you know, and then you had the Flyers playing the North American style, which was far more physical, more body checks, dump and chase with the puck. So, yeah, you had these two styles of play colliding. And the one thing about the Broad Street Bullies, they were known for fighting. And basically outside of Philadelphia, where they were beloved, outside of the city, they were pretty much reviled across North America. But, you know, they never really were given the credit that they deserve for the skill with which they played the game. You know, you can't win back-to-back Stanley Cups just by beating people up. I mean, you have to have skilled players. You have to have outstanding coaching. And the Flyers had all of that.
And this matchup, it sounds like it was almost personal to Ed Snyder, the Flyers owner. This was incredibly important to him. Kind of talk about that and why this mattered so much to him.
Well, he really detested the way Soviet Jews were treated in Russia. And, you know, it came to a head at supposedly a goodwill banquet before the game. And Gene Hart, one of the Flyers announcers, spoke Russian. And he taught Ed Snyder a few words to speak at the banquet, where he would basically greet the Russians and you know, wish them good luck in the game. And Ed Snyder said later that, you know, when he stood up there and looked at the Russian players and coaches, that there was just no way, you know, knowing how their government treated Soviet Jews, that there was no way that he could wish them good luck in the game.
And it's time to take a break on One-on-One. We will continue our conversation with author Ed Groover in just a few moments. But right now, it's the holiday season, folks, and the holidays mean different things to everyone. But whatever the holidays mean to you, get the most out of it in a new vehicle from our friends at Honda. Whether it's traveling to the holiday family dinner in a spacious, efficient Accord hybrid, or heading to a hike to burn it off in a powerful, adventure-ready CR-V hybrid, your holiday adventure awaits with a new Honda during Happy Honda Days. Contact your local Honda dealer today. And now let's return to our conversation on One-on-One with Matt Leon with Ed Groover. He is the author of The Game That Saved the NHL, about the Flyers' 1976 victory over the Soviet Red Army team at the Spectrum.
So talk about the game itself. I think aside from the final score, what people remember most of this game, or what is referenced most, is when the Russians left the ice kind of in protest to an Ed Van Impe hard check. Kind of talk about that moment, how they got back on the ice, and is it true? Because one of the things I've always heard is that they told the Russians they weren't going to get paid if they didn't come back, and the Russians quickly came back. And I've read, is that true, or is that kind of, is there need to be context to that? Kind of talk us through all that.
Okay. Yeah, and I should preface my remarks by reminding people that, you know, Bernie Parent did not play in this game. You know, he was the best goalie in the NHL for the previous two seasons. And in each of the Flyers' Game 6 Stanley Cup victories against the Bruins in 74 and against the Sabres in 75, Bernie had pitched shutouts in both of those games. you know, he was injured. So Wayne Stevenson was in goal for the Flyers. You know, regarding the Ed Van Imp check, you know, that happened in the first period against the Russians' superstar player, Valery Harlamov. And, you know, Eddie came out of the penalty box and hit Harlamov, like you said, with a hard body check. Basically, it was an upraised shoulder and elbow. And Harlamov went down. The consensus among the Flyer players was that basically that Harlamov flopped, that he was faking to get a penalty and give the Russians a man advantage on the power play. Because Eddie said that, you know, he didn't hit him that hard, that he should fold up like a $2 suitcase. And, you know, that he had hit guys much harder than that in the NHL and they had never gone down. But the Russians, their head coach, Konstantin Loktev, demanded that the referee, Lloyd Gilmore, you know, assess a penalty to Eddie Van Imp. Gilmore refused, saying it was a clean check. And Loktev pulled his team off the ice and said, you know, you guys are basically playing animal hockey and we're not going to go back to Russia on stretchers. So we're heading back to the our locker room until we can get something figured out. As far as the financial aspects were concerned, there is a story that Ed Snyder and the NHL brass told Loktev and the Russians that, you know, if you don't come back and finish the game, you're not getting paid. Loktev has said since then that the Russians had been paid in advance, so money was not an issue at that point. Loktev said he was concerned only for the safety of his players because they did have the Olympics coming up. The Winter Olympic Games were coming up. And he said, you know, we didn't come to Philadelphia for a boxing match. You know, we came to play hockey. And if the Flyers are going to brutalize our players, then we're simply not going to play. So you have those two contrasting and conflicting, you know, stories of what actually happened. But, you know, the Russians did return to the ice, and it wasn't long after that that the Flyers scored to take a lead into the first intermission.
And this was not a fluke. The Flyers, I think they outshot them close to 4-1. It was like 47-13, something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And in reading part of your book and reading some other articles, it just seemed like the Flyers knew exactly what they wanted to do and the Russians never adjusted. The Russians, they let the Russians skate all around, but they just protected the areas of the ice they wanted to protect, and the Russians never really adjusted to what the Flyers were doing, no?
Yeah, that's correct. And Fred Shiro took what he knew firsthand of Soviet hockey from his visit to Moscow. And he combined that with his watching of film of the Russians' victories against the Rangers and the Bruins and their tie with the Canadians, and then basically went old school. What he did was he borrowed from the Toronto Maple Leafs of the 40s and their coach Hap Day, who had a defense that was similar to what the Flyers would use, and basically a 1-4 alignment where you have four players lined up at the blue line and you send one person into forecheck. And in Shiro's system, what he would do was send in his center, Bobby Clark or McLeish or whoever's on the center position, into forecheck and would have the remaining four players stationed across the blue line. So when the Russians stick-handled and came up the ice, they were met with four players standing there, you know, waiting for them, and were basically greeted with pretty resounding body checks. In fact, Moose DuPont really set a tone for that game in the first period when he leveled Alexander Gusev at the blue line, and that got the Spectrum crowd really fired up and set the tone for what was to follow in that first period.
One of the great lines to come out of this, Joe Watson, who didn't score a ton of goals, I think it was a shorthanded goal he scored in this one. And what was the line, tell me the line Fred Shiro had after the game when he talked about Joe Watson scoring that goal.
Oh, yeah. Joe Watson told me in one of our interviews that Freddie went up to him after the game and said, you just set the Russian hockey program back 20 years with that goal. Because like you said, you know, Joe was not what you'd call an offensive defenseman, like a Bobby Orr type player. He didn't score a lot of goals, you know, and then he was able to beat Tretiak on a rebound shot and gave the Flyers, you know, what was at the time a fairly commanding lead. You know, but the Russians did come back. They cut into their deficit. They made it a 3-1 game going into the third period. And that's, you know, the way the Russians could score goals, it was still anyone's game. Because the way the Soviets played, they did a lot of deliberate passing. They took their time with a lot of east-west passing, tic-tac-toe passing, basically. But when they got on a roll, as they showed against the Rangers and the Bruins, they could score basically, you know, like punches and bunches. I mean, they could really put across quite a few goals in just a couple minutes. And again, you know, the Flyers did not have Bernie Parent, you know, the best goalie in the league at that time. He was not in net that day.
So the Flyers win 4-1. Kind of talk to me about the aftermath of this game. You talk about the game that saved the NHL. You know, what does this do on both sides?
Yeah, well, it reestablishes the NHL as the premier hockey league in the world, you know, because the Flyers, champions of the NHL, dominated the Soviet League champions, the Central Red Army Club. So, it saves the reputation of the NHL, it saves the reputation of the Stanley Cup, and it shows that the NHL's best is better than the Soviet's best. And so that was the NHL standpoint. The Soviet standpoint was that we won the Super Series 5-2-1. You know, we still won five games and only lost two and tied one. But, you know, the NHL, Clarence Campbell countered by saying, well, yeah, but they didn't beat our three top teams. No, they didn't beat the Flyers, who were the league champs. They didn't beat the Sabres, who were the NHL Stanley Cup finalists from the year before. And they didn't beat the Canadiens, who would go on to win the Stanley Cup in 76. So both sides in the aftermath claimed the victory.
What was the most interesting thing you learned in writing this book? Maybe something that you didn't know or that you didn't appreciate how important it was to everything that went along with this. Is there something that stands out that really you just found fascinating in your research?
Yeah, in talking with the Flyers players and talking with Ray Shiro, you know, Freddie's son, the thing that struck me is just how important this game was. You know, Fred Shiro always said that this game meant more to him and to the Flyers organization than their two Stanley Cup victories. And the players themselves said that they never in any Stanley Cup series did they feel the pressure that they felt in this one game showdown with the Central Red Army. And, you know, part of the reason was that, you know, when you're in a best of seven Stanley Cup, you can afford to lose like maybe the first game or, you know, you can still come back. When you're in a one game showdown, I mean, you lose that game and that's it. There's no coming back from it. And that's why the Flyers, they look back on that game. They said that the pressure that they were under was suffocating. It really was. And, you know, for them to be able to play as well as they did in that kind of pressure is pretty amazing. And, you know, I don't think any NHL team before, any NHL team since, or even into the future, will ever face the kind of pressure that the Flyers faced that day against the Soviet Red Army.
What do you think would have been the ramifications had the Flyers lost? Say they play well, they lose 5-2, something like that. Do you think there would be significant ripple effects that we would see a different timeline of things today? Do you think it could have had that? Because you talk, you know, there was the NHL, there was also the WHA, and they were competing leagues at that time. Could this have boosted the WHA or in some way? Or are there alternate scenarios you could see playing out that would be much lead us to a much different place in the hockey world than we are now had the Flyers lost this game?
I'm not sure it would have boosted the WHA because they were kind of like the ABA in basketball in that, you know, there was facing severe financial problems, and they just couldn't afford to stay afloat. And, you know, the NHL, you know, for all the stars that the WHA had, including Bobby Hull and an aging Gordie Howe, the NHL was still the premier league in North America. You know, the WHA teams eventually joined the NHL. But, you know, as far as the timeline goes, you know, I think because of the Iron Curtain in the Soviet Union, I don't think you would have had players from the Soviet League coming over to play in the NHL. Now, they had offers. Tretiak had offers. Valery Harlamov had offers from various NHL teams to defect. And, you know, they were giving what was at the time pretty substantial contract offers. But, of course, you know, their point of view was, you know, we're Russian. We believe in our Soviet system, and we're not going to defect to North America to play hockey. But, you know, there were other Super Series that followed, but none of them had the importance of this initial one. This really was the groundbreaking series where you had, for the first time, you know, NHL teams playing Soviet League teams. And for that reason, I think it stands alone as being pretty special.
The book is The Game That Saved the NHL. Ed Gruber, thanks so much for taking the time. This was great.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Make memories during Happy Honda Days. Want to thank Ed Gruber, author of The Game That Saved the NHL, for being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor and leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on the platform formerly known as Twitter, now known as X, at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well, at MattLeon1060. Thanks for listening in 2023. Really proud of the episodes we were able to bring you and hope you enjoyed them as much as we did making them. And be sure to join us again in 2024 when we bring you more conversations with people you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.